Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Kokomo, Indiana, and earned a DO degree from Des Moines University's College of Osteopathic Medicine. He was in private practice from 1979 through 2010 and is the past president of the American College of Osteopathic Obstetrics and Gynecologist. A go-kart accident in 2001 left him permanently paralyzed from the waist down, and his autobiography is entitled The Gift Is You. His name, Dr. David Wolf. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. David Wolf, the author of The Gift Is You. Doctor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's a real honor for me to be here with you, and especially on WJR today.
Can we talk about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Yes, I grew up in Kokomo, Indiana. It's a small town, about 50,000. And my father was a milkman. He delivered milk at stores. Dad was a really hard worker really had a lot of good ethics behind him. And my mother was a regular mother, but she knew I wanted to go to medical school. So when I was in sixth grade, my mother went to school to be a beautician. And my mother was a very, very good beautician. And but she still had a shop in her home. And so that was where I grew up at. And I went to Kokomo High School, which is a large school in Indiana. It's about 1,000 kids with my graduating class. And as you probably know, Jack, basketball was a hallmark in Indiana, and Kokomo was no exception. We had 7,000 people seats in the gym, and all of them were sold out season ticket-wise. So it was a lot different coming here, and here there's more emphasis on hockey rather than basketball.
You knew you wanted to be a doctor since the fourth grade.
Yes.
How'd you figure that out at such a young age?
Well, it's a really interesting question because in the fourth grade, when it started, I happened to be looking out at the playground because I wish I was out there playing basketball, I'll be honest with you. And for some reason, this is a true story, God told me that I should be a physician. I really believe that. In fact, you won't believe this, Jack, but in the fourth grade, I started doing three things to make that happen. One, I started... my handwriting started becoming worse. As you probably know, most doctors have bad handwriting. And so I started practicing, changed my handwriting to good from bad. Number two, I thought that all doctors wrote with fountain pens. So I went uptown to Kokomo, and I got me a really nice fountain pen. In fact, I used that all throughout my college career. And that fountain pen back in those days, you won't believe it, cost me $50, and I paid for it myself. And the third thing I did to become a doctor, I thought, I started using black ink. So I was very destined, and my thing didn't change. And when I became a sophomore in high school, you won't believe it, I decided I want to be an OBGYN physician.
Why an OBGYN?
I have no idea back in my high school days. I know now, of course, but my mother did not go to an OBGYN. She went to a general practitioner. So I had no idea why I wanted to be an OBGYN then. Later on, I decided that it was something that I really liked to get close to people. I can't think of any profession that would get closer to somebody than being an obstetrician and gynecologist. I liked also working with my hands, so the surgical aspect, and I like using my mind and the academic aspect. So that's why I decided later, but in sophomore and high school, I had no idea why I decided I want to be an OBGYN.
We're talking to Dr. David Wolf. Doctor, you were blessed to be part of 11,000-plus births.
Yes.
Talk to us about the miracle of birth.
The miracle of birth is really something that is really unbelievable. It's unbelievable that a sperm and an egg unite from two people. and a new being is formed, a new chromosomes are formed that this world has never seen before. And being an OBGYN, you get to follow that process. You get to hear the heartbeat for the first time with the mother. You get to see the ultrasound images the mother. And then you get to culminate it by being a part of that delivery process. It is such a special process because you see a baby cry for the first time. You see mothers and fathers' eyes shed tears because this is their child. And so I can't think of anything that is a better option in life than being there with that patient. And I got to do it 11,000 times. I was really blessed to be in the delivery room with those individuals and my patients.
What has delivering 11,000 plus babies taught you the most?
I think it taught me the most that there's miracles in life, and that's what it is also. There's miracles in life. But I think the other thing it taught me was that nothing is a guarantee. Even though that we had ultrasounds and all the lab tests, in this country, there's still 2% of those babies that are born that are not normal. So I think it also taught me that you have to be prepared to accept tragedy in your life in addition to the miracles that flow. And the people that are able to handle those things are people that are able to handle life in general.
We're talking to Dr. David Wolf. His earliest delivery that survived was 25 and a half weeks, 1.8 pounds. Doctor, what does a mother's eye say when she sees her newborn child for the first time?
Well, usually, it's not always, but usually her eyes say, how grateful it is that God has given me this child to deliver. Their eyes are usually have a little bit of tears in them. They're usually smiling and things of that nature. And I usually, when I was doing the deliveries, I was looking at their eyes because I wanted to see what their response would be. Unfortunately, Jack, as you might imagine, not all the eyes are one of joy. Some people are not happy when they deliver a child, and that was an experience that was very tough for me to get used to. But for the most part, it's a very enjoyable situation, and the patient is so happy that their child is normal and a new process in their life is starting with their partner.
We're talking to Dr. David Wolf. When we come back, we'll ask him what his life was like in early July of 2001. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. David Wolf, the past president of the American College of Osteopathic Obstetrics and Gynecologists. That
Correct.
Is the last time I'm saying that today, Doctor.
That's good.
Tell us about your life prior to July 29th, 2001.
Yeah, my life prior to July 29th, 2001, I was on top of the mountain, Jack. I was probably the most busiest and most respected OBGYN physician in southeastern Michigan. As you already mentioned, I had done 11,000 deliveries by that time. I was probably doing between 10 and 15 gynecological surgeries. I also had one of the most prominent OBGYN resi programs in the state of Michigan. I was the program director for that resi program, and it was also well known throughout this country. I had a beautiful wife I'd been married to for maybe about 30 years at that particular point. I had two children that were very successful. And I also had the ability of going to Haiti for 3 years before my accident. Haiti was an unbelievable experience for me. It's taking care of the poor of the poor. So you were using all your skills that you'd learned in medical school, and you're giving these skills to patients that otherwise would not be able to have medical care. And it's also an interesting situation for me because it was a Christian mission. So we prayed before every surgery. We prayed before every delivery. And that's something that probably in America we can't do as well, but you sure can do that in Haiti. And the other thing that I was on top of the mountain with, I was racing go-karts. So I was racing go-karts for 3 years before this particular accident, and I was very successful. I was winning most of the go-kart races and things of that nature. So I literally was on top of the mountain prior to July 29, 2001.
Take us back July 29th, 2001. What happened?
Well, that particular day, it was a beautiful day in Michigan, and I was racing go-karts at Toledo Speedway. It was the second race of the day. I was racing alcohol engines, and I was on the inside of the second row, and the green flag dropped. The green flag dropped, and we headed to the first turn, and we were going probably about 60 miles an hour. And unfortunately, the cars in front of me started spinning, and we were still very close to those cars since it was the first lap. And unfortunately, I had to make a critical decision. I had to make a decision, do I run into them at that speed and possibly kill one of them or injure them, or do I try to go around them and miss them and possibly win the race? So I elected to make a sharp turn to the right. I made another sharp turn to the left, and unfortunately, Jack, my car also started spinning. The back of my go-kart hit the concrete wall so hard that I drove the back of my seat and my gears into my back. And unfortunately, I severed my spine at the level of my umbilicus. I was thrown out of the cart. I was laying on the track. Almost all my ribs were fractured. These little bones in the back called the spinous process were all fractured. Blood was running into my left lung. And literally, I was laying on the track fighting for my life.
First 2 days, you're unconscious. And you make a statement that God talked to you. David Wolf, what did God say to you?
Well, it's a very interesting situation because I was unconscious for 2 days. And I didn't realize it, but my life was in danger at that particular point. And during that time, God started talking to me. And he said, David, he said, you know, I'm going to be with you. I'm going to carry you when you can't walk. I'm going to pick you up when you fall. And I'm going to use you and your life now to glorify me. What an unbelievable feeling it is when you're near death to have somebody that you really believe in saying to you that everything is going to be okay. No matter what happens here, I'm going to be by your side. And it was a feeling that that has led me to where I am today.
When the neurosurgeon, Dr. McCormick, told you what had happened and what the rest of your life would be in a wheelchair, David Wolf, what did you say to Dr. McCormick?
Well, you got to set it up a little bit because when Dr. McCormick walked in there, I had no idea how ill I was. I had just gotten off the respirator, and my wife and my two children walked in with the doctor. I did not know Dr. McCormick, so I didn't know who he was initially. So he proceeded to tell me, he said, you know, David, you've been involved in a major go-kart racing accident, and you've had some very serious injuries, but the most serious injury was that you severed your spine at the level of your umbilicus or your belly button, and you're going to be paralyzed from the waist down for the rest of your life. Now, just think about it. What would you have thought if somebody had told you that out of the wild blue yonder? Because I had no idea how ill I was. So I looked at Dr. McCormick and I said, Dr. McCormick, it looks like I have a new challenge in life, doesn't it? And, of course, everybody in the room thought maybe I was on drugs or didn't understand what he said. So he said, Dr. Wolf, I don't think you understood what I said. I said, no, Dr. McCormick, you didn't understand what I said.
What did the injury teach you about yourself?
Well, I think it taught me a lot about myself. Number one, I had always been a driven person. And so you never really know that until you're laying on your back and fighting for your life. So I was hoping that what I believed in myself and what I tried to teach my children and my OBGYN residents, that you never give up and when you're faced with tragedy. So it taught me that. It also taught me to believe in things higher than myself. Sometimes when you're in this business of medicine and you think that, you know, your life is being controlled by helping others, sometimes you forget that there's somebody else leading your life, and that reminded me of that. And I think the other thing it taught me to rely on somebody higher than myself to handle all of my problems. And so those are the things that I learned from the accident.
When we had lunch and we met face-to-face yes. a month or so ago, I was struck with your outlook on life, your positive disposition. There's no bitterness in you. You were the president of the American College of Osteopathic Obstetrics Gynecologist. Wife Anita, son, daughter, you had everything. And in an instant, it's gone. Changed forever. Why aren't you bitter?
Well, there's no question I went from the top of the mountain to the bottom of the valley in a matter of seconds. There's no question about that, as we've already explained. But I think that when somebody talks to you that is controlling your life, i.e. Jesus, then I had no fears. I mean, why would you have a fear if somebody told you that's the greatest person ever, that everything is going to be okay? I'm going to give you all the grace, all the love that you need to make it to tomorrow. I'm going to utilize you to glorify me. So if you really believe that, Jack, then why would you be afraid? Why would you be disappointed? Why would you be sad that this happened? Because you know tomorrow there's somebody going to be leading you down a road that he wants you to go down.
All right. It's one thing for you to accept that and surrender to God. Any life-altering injury affects the whole family. So how did Anita, how did Brad, how did Raquel, how did they react to this?
Well, of course, that's a different story. God didn't talk to them. I think they reacted in a couple of ways. Number one, my son, when I heard that at the hospital that I was paralyzed, got mad and started hitting the walls of the ICU. My daughter, when she first saw me, fainted. My wife, I'm not really sure what her feeling was, but I think overall, because of my positive attitude, because I wasn't depressed, because I knew there would be a tomorrow, they also started believing that, yes, this road is going to be difficult. It's going to be different than it was before. Anita was going to have to help me more than she ever helped me in my lifetime. And I wouldn't be able to do the things with my children that I normally would possibly do. But because of the positive attitude and the belief that I was going to be doing something more powerful than I was before, I think that helped them, as well as my friends and my OBGYN residents also.
When we come back, we'll ask Dr. Wolf about a hypothetical conversation between him and God today. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Dr. David Wolf. And his basic message is hope in a time of tragedy. David, later today, this evening, God talks to you and says, if you want, I'll get you out of that wheelchair, give you your legs back, everything, you can go-kart again, whatever you want to do. Your choice. What do you tell God?
Well, if God said that to me, I'd have to ask him a question. I'd have to ask him the question, will you still be by my side? Will you still allow me to glorify you and things of that nature? If he says no, David, you don't go back the way you were before the accident. Have everything you had before, but you don't have what I've given you after the accident, then I would say, no, I don't want to walk again. I don't want to be doing surgery. I don't want to be doing deliveries. I want to be the way I am now because of the feeling I have in my heart and because of the ability I have of helping other people go through their own tragedies in their life.
As an add-on to that, your daughter Raquel has said, and I quote, my father is much more whole today than before the accident, unquote. God's plan for our life is always greater than our own plan for our life. You've accepted that. Most of us, we can't accept that. We're always telling him what we want and never listen to what he wants. Talk to us about God's plan for my life versus my plan for my life.
Well, I think we all have our plans for our life. There is absolutely no question about it. And I think God tries to influence us all as we go down this road in life, because I think he has a plan for us. I don't know how he handles other people, but I know what he does to me. He puts major roadblocks in front of me. And I'll just give you a few examples. I was madly in love with a girl in high school that I thought I would marry someday. For whatever reason, God put a roadblock in front of my life with her. And once she said that she didn't want to see me anymore, I still have not seen her more than 50 years later. Number two, remember I wanted to be an OBGYN. I wanted to be a physician since the fourth grade. For whatever reason, when I was a junior in college, I did not get accepted into medical school. And that was very, very difficult for me to accept. I couldn't believe that God had planned my life for this, but all of a sudden he took it away. No, the roadblock was he wanted me to go to graduate school to be a social worker. He believed that that would help me become a better physician. And then he placed the roadblock in front of me. What? Go-kart racing. He decided he wanted me to be a different person than I was. He wasn't going to take medicine away from me, but he was going to utilize me in a different way. So he still let me be with my patients. He still let me be with my residents, but he was going to utilize my life in a different way. So I think with me at least, God has placed roadblocks in front of me, and the roadblocks were so serious I couldn't get around them. I am sure that God does that for everybody. Some people just probably keep working and working to go around that roadblock and don't listen to the roadblocks that he puts in front of them.
There is now a wolf plate on every go-kart in America.
Correct.
Please.
Correct. What happened was this accident wasn't a freak accident. This accident happened about 10 to 12 times a year in professional go-kart racing. So 10 to 12 people every year became paralyzed because of the accident that I had. So for whatever reason, and I don't know the reason, but an inventor came into my room and the neuro ICU unit at St. Vincent's Hospital and said, Dr. Wolf, he says, I got an idea. I want to invent a plate to be placed on the back of go-karts so this kind of accident won't happen to people again. And he said, I would like to name it the Wolf Plate. Would you be willing to let me do that? And I said, you got to be kidding me. Sure I would. And not only that, we made an agreement that a small amount of money from every wolf plate that would be sold would be going to a charity of my source. And back at that time, it was the Miami Institute of Neurology at University of Miami. So now, you're right, Jack, every go-kart in America that's in a go-kart race has the wolf plate on the back of it. So again, tragedy for me solved problems for other people. So how could you be disappointed if you're helping other people prevent the same tragedy that I had and still have the twinkle in your eyes?
You decide to write your autobiography, and the title, The Gift Is You. Why that title?
Well, I don't, you know, writing a book, that's the first time I've ever written a book. The title is extremely important. It's important for your publishers, it's important for your editors and things of that nature. And so they wanted a title that would help tell the story. Well, I thought the title should tell what the book really meant to me. So the gift is you. So the you is that God places all people around us to help us in the things he wants us to do. Parents, children, wife, mentor, things of that nature. So that's the one you. The second you is, of course, Jesus. God places Jesus in our heart, and he's a gift to us also. So those two gifts, the gifts of the people around you that he has given us, and the gift of him is the reason I named it The Gift Is You, a very powerful title for me at least.
Who should read the book?
That's a great question. I think there's different kinds of people that should read this book. I would hope that the people that are undergoing their own tragedies, whether they're going through a divorce, whether their children are on drugs, whether they're going through bankruptcy, those tragedies in their lives, I would hope that my words would help them get through their own tragedies. Number two, I think people that are lost, they just don't know where they're going in life. Hopefully, they'll see that there is a meaning in life, and your life can be important, no matter whether you're doing surgery or whether you're in a wheelchair. So I think that those kind of individuals would be helpful reading the book. And then I think it's just a good book to read. It's a good book on character. It's a good book on what happens in your life. So I think it's just really interesting. So those are the three kind of people that I believe would benefit from reading this book.
If you want to learn more, www.thegiftisyou.org. www.thegiftisyou.org. Dr. Wolf, what do you say to someone listening tonight who has just experienced a life-altering injury?
Well, there's no question that I think that when that happens to you, you ask a lot of whys, and sometimes you think there's not a tomorrow. So what I would say to that individual is that there is always a rainbow at the end of any tragedy. You just have to get through that tragedy. So what I would suggest to those people is that, number one, they hold on to the people around them. They ask those people around them for help, for encouragement, to get them through this. And I would, of course, hope that they would look for a higher source, and my higher source is Jesus. Jesus will help those individuals get through tomorrow, even though they think that tomorrow's not going to be there. So my first thing is, don't give up. As your show says, anything is possible as long as you believe.
We're talking to Dr. David Wolf. At the bottom of his email recently, I quote him, "We all have hardships and carry scars of adversity, some bigger and deeper than others. But the point is, we all have them. What matters is how we handle them." And I'm Jack Rasulo, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasulo. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Dr. David Wolf. And a go-kart accident in 2001 left him permanently paralyzed from the waist down. I quote you again. "Your identity is not what you do, but who you are." What do you say, doctor, to someone that says, "Doc, my identity is what I do"?
Well, I think that what I would say initially is that I used to believe that. I used to believe that my identity was being a physician. I like people calling me doctor. I like the patients saying, "Thank you, doctor," and things of that nature. So I think that a lot of us believe that our identity is who we are. A lot of baseball players and athletes believe that that's who they are. And unfortunately, if you only believe that, when that time is over, and all those times are going to be over, whether it was an accident or not, someday I would not be seeing patients. Someday the pitchers will not be pitching. Some days the quarterbacks will not be throwing balls. So the truth of the story is, our identity is not really what we do, but who we really are, who we really are inside, what we believe, how our life can make a difference to other people. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't do that as a physician, but it does mean that when your days are over, that you're not a physician, that you're still inside who you are, that you're trying to make a difference to other people's lives. So that's what I would say if somebody believed that all they are is a physician. And I would say to them that that day is going to be over with, and who you're going to be when that physician day is over. So I think that you are the person that you are because you're always trying to make a difference in somebody else's life.
David Wolf, do you believe in angels?
Sure, I believe in angels. I think that angels are people that God has given us. I can give you an example. My father was dying of lung cancer. And he was really bitter. My dad was a Christian. We prayed before every meal, and I knew that my dad was a Christian. But for some reason, Dad could not accept him having lung cancer. And so one day I went home several years ago. My dad was still alive, and I said, "Dad," and I said, "You know, God will help you if you just turn to God." So that night after I left, you won't believe this, Jack, but it's a true story. Three angels came in my father's bedroom. And what do you think the angels said? The angels said, "We will be with you." So for the next 3 months of my father's life, he was a total peace. He never asked why again. He never asked why he was dying. So God puts angels in our lives. And they may not look like angels. It could be an individual. It could be a situation, whatever it is. But he puts angels in our lives to help us in a time of need that otherwise we may not be able to get through.
Speaking of angels, DMC's Rehabilitation Institute of Michigan, you met a whole bunch of angels. Tell us about RIM.
Well, the reason I went to RIM, first of all, you have to decide where you're going to get to go through rehab. And so I went to RIM for two reasons. Number one is, the first reason is kind of funny. They had a large private room, and I wanted to be in that large private room so people could come to see me and I could have talks with them and things of that nature. But the real reason I went to RIM was that there was a doctor there by the name of Dr. Nisoff. He is a rehab physician, and Dr. Nisoff was a quadriplegic. He was a quadriplegic before medical school. So I thought I could relate to him because he was a quadriplegic. And in real reality, Dr. Nisoff and I have become very, very good friends. But there's a couple other people there that I would like to mention. I would like to mention my occupational therapist. Her name is Diane. I would like to mention my rehab therapist. My physical therapist, her name was Janine. Those individuals brought me from where I was in St. Vincent. They saved my life, St. Vincent Hospital did. But RIM gave my life back to me. They allowed me to function in a wheelchair. They allowed me to learn how to transfer. They allowed me how to take a shower in a wheelchair, things of that nature. So RIM was very, very important to me during that 6 to 8 weeks that I was a patient in that institution.
Once again, speaking of angels, you've mentioned in the first segment that you made several trips to Haiti.
Yes.
Tell us about Haiti and the people of Haiti.
Well, Haiti was very, very special to me. I went there, as I mentioned, 3 years in a row. We were given the opportunity of taking care of the poor of the poor. We in America do not understand how really poor people can be, but these people had no ability to have any surgical procedures done on them, no ability to have any health care. In fact, Jack, they didn't even know when you asked them how old they were. They had no idea. They couldn't figure out because they never were given a date. So you were given a ability to take care of those individuals. But one of the greatest things for me was the first night that we were there, it was Super Bowl night. Super Bowl night in America. We were Americans, is that right? And we wanted to see the Super Bowl. And so there was somebody there who had a television, and we were planning on watching the Super Bowl. But right about the time we was getting ready to get in the truck to go to that game, and watch that game, one of the midwives came to us, Mandel, and says, you know, Dr. Wolf, there's a patient living on the mountain. We need your help. So after a couple of minutes, we thought, well, that's probably what we should do. So my resident, Dr. Hartman, and I went up to the top of the mountain with Mandela, and we helped deliver this baby in a hut that had only dirt on the floor, minimal lights. We had our flashlights with us. And what a special expression it was to be there to help that woman deliver her baby. But the next day was even more special. During surgery, one of the interpreters said, you know, Dr. Wolf, there's somebody out there to see you. And I said, really? Yes, they want to talk to you. So who do you think it was? It was the father and the mother of the child we delivered the night before. And they said, Dr. Wolf, we'd like for you to name the child. I says, really? I said, I don't know any Haitian names. And so, no, just give us any name. So I thought of my wife's Anita. I thought that was a little bit too complicated. My wife's middle name was Sue. So we decided to name her Sue. Then they said, you know, Dr. Wolf, we want one more thing. We'd like for you to be her godfather. I said, oh, my God. Jack, you won't believe it, but tears started rolling down my eyes that these people wanted me to be their godfather. So I still keep in contact with baby Sue. She's 13 now. I haven't seen her since my accident, but we still communicate, and hopefully that someday we'll be able to see her. But to be with people that are so appreciative of your care, to be involved in deliveries and surgeries, and some of the surgery they would never, ever be able to have if it wasn't for the American doctors, is something that I truly, truly cherish. And it's something that I'll have to ask God, why he took that away from me. I've accepted everything else, but I can't quite accept that, and so I'm going to have to ask him why that was taken away from me.
Over the 10 years of this show, regularly when we've had a guest that's worked with the very, very poor throughout the world, they say, I've learned much more from the poor than I ever did from the rich. Why?
Oh, there's no question about it. The poor, you learn from them because they have nothing. But they still have a smile on their heart. They still have the ability to say thank you. And whatever you do for them, they are appreciative. The rich people in the world don't need you. They think everything that they need. They don't say thank you as much. In fact, I don't know if you're familiar with the words in the Bible, but God tells us the rich people will have a harder time getting to heaven than the poor people. Why? Because they think they can do it all themselves. The poor people will realize that they need help to get through this world, and anything you can do for them, they are so appreciative. So I believe that's the difference between the rich and the poor.
Dr. Wolf, as our time winds down together this evening, could you lead us in a closing prayer?
Oh, it would be my honor. Dear God, I want to thank you for being on this program. Anything is possible. As you know, anything is possible as long as we have you by our side. No matter what the tragedies in life are, no matter what the difficulties are, you are always there for us. You will pick us up when we fall. You will carry us when we can't walk. And you want us to know that no matter what happens in our life, that you are there. So I'm just hopeful that my words on this program tonight have been a benefit to those who are going through their own tragedies. I'm just hopeful that those who may read the book, The Gift Is You, will find that no matter what life gives you, that there is hope because of Jesus Christ. And I just want to thank Jack for believing in me. And grateful that he asked me to be part of his program tonight. Amen.
David Wolf, the Serenity Prayer goes like this. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You, sir, live that every day. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Jack. I appreciate it.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Frasulla. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.